Okay, so after Maharaj's brilliant exposition on the third verse of the Upadeshamrita, so we'll now be looking at text number 2 of the Upadeshamrita. We'll be trying to elaborate and bring out some of the key points here. And again, we beg for Maharaj's blessings and the blessings of all the Vaishnavas. Your mercy, things can always unfold in an auspicious way. Okay, so I'll just say, okay, a bit closer. Is it better? Okay, so I'll just chant the verse and then we'll read the translation and take it from there. It's not there, okay, okay. No, I'm just saying. Atyaharas prayasyascha prajalpo niyamagraha jnanasangascha lulyamcha sadbhibhakti vinasyati. Okay, so I'll read the translation and then we'll begin our discussion on this again. Very, very wonderful set of instructions from Śrīla Rūpa Gosvāmī. One's devotional service is spoiled when he becomes too entangled in the following six activities. Excuse me. Number one, eating more than necessary or collecting more funds than required. Number two, over-endeavoring for mundane things that are very difficult to obtain. Number three, talking unnecessarily about mundane subject matters. Number four, practicing the scriptural rules and regulations only for the sake of following, them and not for the sake of spiritual advancement, or rejecting the rules and regulations of the scriptures and working independently or whimsically. Five, associating with worldly minded persons who are not interested in Krishna consciousness. And six, being greedy for mundane achievements. Okay, so we're gonna get into this a bit more with reference to Prabhupada's purport and also the writings of Śrīla Bhaktivinoda Thakur and his Bhakti Lokya. Okay, but we'll say Mangalacharya and then we'll go from there. Om Ajnana Tamarandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshum Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sakrachatam Sahakana Raghunatham Vitam Tvam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sabhadutam Purjana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Suta Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gauravaktavrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Okay, so where should we begin? So just a point on this principle, general principle. We need in our spiritual lives to know two things. We need to know what we're aiming for and we need to know what to avoid. Why? Because the material energy is very, very powerful and very, very strong and very intelligent. It's not enough to know what you're going for. You also need to know the things that you should be careful to avoid, because otherwise those things can sneak up on you. You see the point? You may be aiming for something, and you may not realize that there are certain things creeping into your life that will stop you from achieving your goal. So the teachings, the Shastra, are very clear on this point, that we understand the things that we are looking to realize or looking to do, and we also understand the things that will stop us and that will actually sabotage our endeavor. Does that make sense? So in all activity, these things are actually there. It's actually a very, very, again, a very powerful and intelligent point. Always keep your eye on the goal and be careful to recognize the Maya so that she doesn't come in. I remember His Holiness Tamal Christian Raj recalling a pastime that he had with Srila Prabhupada. So they were on a train, and it was quite full, but Tamal Krishna Maharaj had a little space next to him on the train. So there was a family, and he didn't realize it was a family. He thought it was just one man. So he motioned over to the man that there's a seat here. So the man went and sat down. Then the man, he motioned to his wife that there's a seat there. So she came and squeezed in. Then she motioned to her children that there's a seat next to her. So they came in, and Tamal Krishna Maharaj was basically forced out of his seat because he'd given some space, and then one by one these people would come in. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj told Srila Prabhupada, and Srila Prabhupada said, yes, this is the nature of Maya. He said, you don't give her any room. You give her a little inch, she'll come and take over completely. So this verse is powerful from this point of view, but it's also a principle. If you want to be robust and powerful in anything that you do, you should know exactly what you're trying to achieve and exactly the things that can sabotage your achievement. In the secular world, when people, I don't know if you get this here so much, but in London sometimes, and in America, you'll get salesmen calling you up, trying to sell you things, right? And these salesmen, they are trained in what's called objection handling. So before they call you, they've already thought about what your objections could be for buying their product, right? And they actually prepare so that when you say, I don't want to buy your product because of X, Y, and Z, they've got an answer to your objection. Right? They're thinking so far ahead. They know what they want to achieve. They know how you may get out of it, and they've got ways to actually stop you from getting out of buying their product. So this principle is very, very powerful. So Maharaj has explained very wonderfully exactly those activities which are favorable. And now Sri Rupa Goswami is explaining to all of us, these are the things that you do not want to creep into your life. And if these things are in our lives at the moment, these are the things that we want to move out of our life. In our International Society for Krishna Consciousness, to be honest, there are many, we are like people running a marathon. But the kind of shocking thing in many senses, and this relates to what we said earlier, the shocking thing is that we don't understand that when we're running a marathon, so many of us are running a marathon and we've got something tied against our leg, right? You know, if you have a weight, a heavy weight, tied around your leg and you're trying to run in the marathon, does it work? No. Now, what happens if you don't even know that you have some weight tied around your leg? Right? You're running the marathon, you'll think it's a marathon. You'll think it's just the nature of this marathon is so difficult. Until someone points out to you that actually you could run this marathon much faster if you just unchained. if you just removed this particular thing which is slowing you down. Does that make sense? So these are the six things that are slowing us down. And we will do some analysis. We may find that to different degrees we are engaging in some of these things which are unfavorable. To different degrees. And the proposition we have for you is that you can actually run this race much faster. Our proposition is that you can actually make much greater advancement if we remove these particular things from our lives. So in our society of devotees, we may find that people have these invisible weights. And Maya is so smart that unless we are studying such literatures, we won't even know that we're carrying this heavy burden in our endeavor to reach the goal. Some people, they are moving forward, but it's much more endeavor because of these weights. For other people, the weight becomes heavier and heavier, and then you turn around one day, and you don't even see the person in the association of Vaishnavas. A few years ago, there was one person that we knew, my family and I knew, who was interested in Krishna consciousness. Very nice person, like that. Had had some difficulties in exchanges with her family and other things. And so she was at university and she was interested in Krishna consciousness. And then what happened was, she started to have certain types of association. So first of all, she was very interested, very enthusiastic, reading, inquiring, asking questions. She started to chant. Then she started to get certain types of association. And it was interesting to see, because what we saw was exactly what's indicated here. After a while, there was doubts. Well, you know, how do you know that Krishna is actually God? After a while, the practice of chanting stopped. No, I don't have time because I've got to do these other things. Actually, what was happening is she felt some embarrassment amongst those people that she was associating with, in them knowing that she was a devotee or she was practicing Krishna consciousness. I think sometimes she would tell people and they would challenge her, and then they put doubts into her mind. And then eventually got to a point she was going to parties, and when she was asked, but you know, is this favorable to your devotion? So she said, oh, it's okay. When I'm at the party and I'm dancing, I'm remembering Krishna. You know, I'm remembering that this is not, you know, good, and I'm seeing that people are unhappy, and it's helping my Krishna consciousness. Seriously, this is a real situation. And then eventually, nowhere to be seen. Eventually, nowhere to be seen. We haven't heard from this person for years. Now, this is something that may happen in so many places, but we should always remember that what's happening is that person's opportunity in this lifetime to be completely freed of all suffering and to return to the spiritual world, to never take birth again in any material situation, and to never experience any type of suffering whatsoever. That opportunity may have been lost for the rest of this lifetime. We have to remember what we're doing. We have to remember how valuable the goal is. Because if we remember how valuable the goal is, then we'll keep our eyes out. We'll keep our vigilance. And we'll keep a focus on what we're meant to achieve. And we'll keep being very careful to see that nothing is sneaking into our life space. This is a strategy by Maya. This is one of the classic strategies. Because she knows that you know what the goal is, it's very easy just to get you by sneaking into your life with so many other things. And it comes bit by bit by bit to the point that you turn around one day and you think, how did Maya get into my house? How did she get into my life? Because Prabhupada said she comes in like a needle and out like a plow, right? It's very, very important. So these are the things that we are meant to be on guard against. And we will do some analysis to see to what extent we are free of these six enemies in one sense. Okay. So let us first of all list them again, and then we can go through them and kind of expand on that point. So the first one was eating more than necessary or collecting more funds than required. Okay, now this is an interesting one, right? Eating more than necessary. And we've heard in the first verse, Vacho vegam manasa krodha vegam jiva vegam utarapasta vegam. Etam vegam yovishahetu dira savam apimam privivim shashishyat. We've heard about the urges of the tongue, the belly, the genitals. Let's connect the dots a little. Right? What are we doing in Krishna consciousness? Right? What has Srila Prabhupada come to do? Let's analyze this. You have a Nitya Siddha Vaishnava who's come from the spiritual world under instruction by Krishna. He is coming here to propagate Krishna consciousness all over the world. Right? You have the material world which is full of living entities who are envious of Krishna. What is the purpose of our movement? The purpose of this International Society for Krishna Consciousness is to get the living entities of this material world to accept the very person that they've come here to reject. The very person who we do not want to see. The very person who we're trying to take the position of. Srila Prabhupada has come here to turn that whole thing around 180 degrees and get people who are running away from God to turn back to Him. And that is particularly marked in the Western world. Right? With the so-called materially advanced societies. Where they become sophisticated in their atheism. So it's a complete contrast to what the living entity in this conditioned world is looking for. To do something like this, to achieve a goal like this, takes great potency and great determination. Where does that determination come from? Here it talks about overeating. We know that the tongue, belly and genitals are in a line. So when people don't control the tongue, everything else in that line is also disturbed. So when Maharaj was speaking earlier, he made this point, very powerful point, very profound point, about the determination relating to one being able to give up or being free of the desire for sense gratification. In particular, Maharaj spoke about sex life. So there is an underlying principle behind it all, and that is the principle of trying to enjoy separately from Krishna. We actually, as we let this first shackle go, we will find that we will access more control, more strength, more determination. In the secular world, in personal development, they talk about people realizing their potential. For devotees, our ability and our capacity to move forward in devotional life, it comes to the extent that we are following these pure personalities. We take shelter of them by following their instruction. And what they're telling us through these pages is that you can move closer to Krishna much faster. There are six invisible weights on each practicing devotee that you can remove that will move you leaps forward. And the first one here is this point about overeating or over collecting. Yeah, that's overeating or over collecting. And we mentioned that also in relation to the point that our lives, unfortunately, are much more complex than they need to be. It was not meant to be this difficult. And we have to constantly remember that. We need to separate real Krishna consciousness from misapplied Krishna consciousness. Misapplied Krishna consciousness is something that is not spoken about so much in our movement. Misapplied Krishna consciousness is when I don't know the teachings. I know a little and I add a whole range of material things to my life and I say that this is all Krishna consciousness, it's so difficult. Real Krishna consciousness is available to every single one of us. Real Krishna consciousness is that if I'm going to do something, I need to know exactly how to do it expertly. Right? There's a vast difference between doing Krishna consciousness and doing Krishna consciousness expertly. This nectar of instruction is for those who want to perform devotional life expertly. You have two people running a race. One person, he is expert. He's trained. He's been coached. He's been practicing. And now, where they're about to run, right? He knows what he wants to do. He knows what the goal is. He knows how to achieve it. He's done all the practice. And then you have another person on the same race. So what they have in common is they both have the same goal. The difference is one of them is expert. One of them knows how to expertly achieve the goal. And the other one is not really so clear on how to achieve it. Ladies and gentlemen, my question for each and every one of us is, which one of these two categories do we fall into? Are you expert in your application of Krishna consciousness? Are we conscious of these six things? Are we careful to avoid these six things? Do we go deeply into the teachings to know how to perform this devotional service properly? There's an underlying principle behind all of this. And this is spoken about by Srila Prabhupada in the Krishna book and in Srimad Bhagavatam. That when devotional service is done in knowledge, that is considered devotional service in the mode of goodness. And Prabhupada distinctly writes that when devotional service is practiced in the mode of goodness in knowledge, one makes more advancement. One achieves more mercy. So these are the things that we need to change in our lives. Don't be fooled by the material energy. What Maya wants you to think is that all devotional service is being practiced, is all the same and it's all difficult. No, it's not true. The reality is there are varying degrees of expertise. There's varying degrees of expert application of Krishna consciousness. The more expertly you apply Krishna consciousness, the more you receive the mercy, the more you relish. Shushukam. And this is the point that we must always remember. Krishna, Srila Prabhupada, all the acharyas, they want you to have the best. So they would not give you any instruction unless it's actually the best for you. And I'm saying this because, to be honest, in many people's minds, there's an underlying fear of following. Again, we don't talk about this so much, but we think, if I have to do all the things that the scripture says, I mean, I'm not going to enjoy so much. You know, I mean, I want to do some of them because I'm a devotee, but can't I do a few other things here and there? Because can't I enhance Rupa Goswami's instructions? Right? He's given something, but I can enhance it. I can do a few extra bits and pieces and it'll be nicer. It's not true. Rupa Goswami is the leader of all the six Goswamis. Why is he the leader of all the six Goswamis? Because he's the most expert in relishing the mellows of devotional service. He is the most expert. So when he is giving such an instruction, I mean, it wouldn't be possible to conceive of what he experiences. It is outside the realms of human conception. What he, as a Nitya Siddha Vaishnava, is experiencing. And by connotation, what he's giving us an instruction is unlimitedly potent. These are keys that are going to take us further to Krishna. So again, focusing and emphasizing what we said before, attentiveness, heartfelt, enthusiastic engagement with the teachings, as Maharaj also echoed, please meditate on this. And we are hopefully looking to see how we will live these things. We will do an analysis of these six, a real cold analysis in relation to how these six ghosts are haunting our devotional life at the present moment. Right? So it's like a kind of like material exorcism. We're going to remove some of these impediments to our devotional life. So let's elaborate on this first point. Overeating, over-endeavoring. Let me just get to my notes. Okay. So this overeating, over-collecting. Okay. I'll read this statement. This is a statement by Bhaktivinoda Thakur from Sri Bhaktialoka. Okay. So he says, if one can transform all his bodily activities into activities favorable to the devotional service of the Lord, then that is bhakti yoga. We're very lucky. Our teaching is not like mundane religion, right? His Grace Ravindra Swarup was making, senior devotee was making a point that the sense enjoyers, right? The whole idea of just trying to enjoy your senses, this is the normal material. This is like the normal way of being, right? The thesis, you could call it, right? It's sometimes in academic circles, they term it like this. Then you have the opposite of that. The opposite of that is where you have the people who want to just renounce the world, right? The kind of impersonal renunciation, the kind of false renunciation, that we don't engage in anything because everything is fraught with difficulty. Right? So you have the sense enjoy on one side, you have the so-called renunciate on the other. He was explaining that Krishna consciousness is not the thesis of just trying to enjoy the world. It's not the antithesis, the opposite of just trying to reject the world. But Krishna consciousness is the synthesis. It's the two things coming together in a very holistic way. In other words, devotional service is inclusive. As is explained by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur here. Here we're talking about control. We're talking about not overeating, not over-collecting. But we're also recognizing that this is achieved through balance. And he goes on to explain that if we take too much, then our Krishna consciousness gets lost due to being controlled by material mellows or being so much attached and entangled in material stimulation. He says on the other side, because he's balanced, he says, if we take too little, then the body, which is our means of worship, will not be protected. So it's a very, very powerful and very elegant balance. Right? So when we talk about not overeating and not over-collecting, what we mean is dealing in this world, taking what we need in this world, a healthy degree, but not too much and not too little. There's a very, when I first heard this, I mean, it just really knocked me out. There's a point that Prabhupada makes in 7th Canto of Bhagavatam. He says something which, you know, when I heard it, I was like, I can't believe this. And I tried to listen again and tried to understand it. He says that someone who's too poor, they can't take to Krishna consciousness. Yeah. And there was actually a conversation. Prabhupada came to one country and he was saying that the people here, they won't be able to take to Krishna consciousness because they're too poor. Very, very interesting. And you find this completely in line with what's given by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. If it's too little, the mind is disturbed because their bare necessities are not taken care of and it's hard to turn the mind and focus on Krishna because they're just in a survival mentality. Too much, the person doesn't want to rely on Krishna because they think that they're God, because they think that by their resources they can control everything. Both things are problematic. When there's balance, there's power. We should be striving as devotees to really maintain a dynamic and healthy balance. Otherwise, we make big mistakes. Because when one area becomes imbalanced, then it affects other areas of our lives. So think about these points very carefully for yourself. Maybe we'll do this as our first exercise. We'll deal with this principle. Think about your own life. Would you say that in terms of your accumulation of resources, would you say that you are balanced? Would you say that you are over-endeavoring? Or would you say that you are under-endeavoring? I'm just giving you a few moments to contemplate that. You don't have to say anything, but just think about that principle for yourself. Are we living as Vaishnavas in a state of balance? How many times Krishna speaks in the Bhagavad Gita about being equipoised? Think about it. Are we living life in a state of balance? I would like you to rate your own Krishna consciousness, your life at the present moment, between 0 to 10. 10 means that your balance is perfect, it's ideal. 0 means you are completely out of balance. Think of these two things. Number one, honestly, where are you on that scale? And number two, what could you do practically that would bring about more balance? Think about this point. Where are you on that scale? And what could you do practically that would bring about more balance? In various countries in the world, devotees are working so many hours. And the idea is that yes, you know, we can do our duty and engage in devotional service, yes. But then we have to see the way we're working, is it such that we're able to have the energy and the time to nicely cultivate our devotional life? Bear in mind that the world today is not neutral, as we said before. It's designed in such a way that you are encouraged to work like a slave. And to be honest with you, when we say encouraged to work like a slave, we're not even talking about the time alone. That behind the time is how much your energy is drained, isn't it? Many of you have that experience. Even if you have time, if you have no energy, what can you do with that time? So we have to make these decisions consciously. If we actually follow these books, you know what the funny thing is? To be honest, if these books were followed deeply, you'll see future generations, they won't live Krishna consciousness the way that we do. As our movement develops more, and as people are trained deeply in these teachings, deeply, before they jump into a situation, you'll see people will live life very, very differently. Prabhupada said, I think the third generation, they'll be able to light fire by mantra. He said like that. And he knows what he's talking about, because Prabhupada, if he says it, Krishna will make sure that it actually comes true. So we're speaking here about devotional potential. We're speaking here about the elegance, how elegantly we apply our Krishna consciousness. So that you're running in a marathon, but you don't have these six invisible enemies haunting your spiritual progress. So this first exercise. First point, how much is there balance? Because this is talking about the six things to avoid, and this first principle is around overeating and over-collecting. Eating more than necessary or collecting more funds than required. And bear in mind one other point on this principle. When we over-endeavor to collect funds, it also can indicate a lack of faith in Krishna. I'm accumulating because I fear that if I actually do what Krishna wants, he won't take care of me. Now, when I say over, I don't mean impractical. And I emphasize this because if I say anything that's impractical, people internally, no one will say anything, but they'll think, yes, it's not practical, I don't have to listen to this. I won't follow this. I mean very practical. I remember a few years ago when we were traveling with Chandramali Maharaj, and Maharaj was giving the seminar, Srila Prabhupada, our founder, Acharya, and we were speaking about life and having time to spend with family and so on and so forth. And I was just thinking that if life isn't balanced, you're working all the time, the relationships go down, one isn't actually satisfied even on the human level, what to speak of transcendentally. And again, who gets the blame? It's Krishna consciousness. Is this Krishna consciousness is too difficult? The materialists, they seem to be happier than we are, etc., etc., etc. This teaching of Rupa Goswami is because he is a spiritual genius who knows what we need to go back to the spiritual world, and therefore, not only is he given the detail, but please, 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 always remember this principle for the rest of your life. It's not about just practicing Krishna consciousness, it's about the expert practice of Krishna consciousness. They make a huge difference to what you experience. We have access to these books all the time. You can read these books all the time. You can meditate daily. How expertly am I applying this science of Krishna consciousness? And the more expert you apply, the more that you will relish devotional life in Krishna consciousness. Everyone in our International Society for Krishna Consciousness is explosive. What do I mean by that? If you as a devotee are happy, if you as a devotee are spiritually connected, do you have any idea how powerful that is? Do you have any? You will come into a room and even before you said something, your consciousness will affect the environment. As we were explaining in a previous retreat, and I remember whenever I hear Prabhupada disciples speak about Prabhupada, I always got that sense. It wasn't just that Prabhupada, you know, was clever in his speech. He carried a certain presence. There's a shakti there. He can walk into the room, say nothing, but you will feel that there's a shift, there's a difference here. Whenever we become more connected to Krishna, Krishna's potency and his mercy flows through that particular devotee. We're dealing with very profound, very esoteric, very subtle science. In, let's see. What is this literature? The Yoga Sutras, Patanjali's Yoga Sutras. It explains that one who has perfected the ahimsa, non-violence, that means someone who doesn't speak violently, does not act violently, doesn't think violently, for such a person, no one can be aggressive in that person's presence. Because their consciousness has nothing within it which is of a violent nature. So when you're around them, there's nothing, you can't tune in, there's nothing within them that you can resonate with to be aggressive. That means, ladies and gentlemen, the greatest gift that we all carry is the quality of our consciousness. The quality and the degree of our Krishna consciousness. And therefore, with people like Srila Prabhupada, and you see that with other senior advanced devotees, it's their consciousness that does so many things. And their words and all these other things, their actions are a manifestation of an actual deep, profound consciousness and a deep and profound connection to Krishna. And any one of you in this room can have the same thing by practice and by mercy. So we haven't even begun to our devotional life. There is so much more. So much more. So this first thing is about this over eating and over collecting. We want to accept things as Krishna's mercy, accepting as much as needed for and is favorable for our devotional service, and not more than that. Because there's no neutral position in the material world. When you accept more, guess what actually happens? You become a slave of what you accept. We think that the conveniences of modern life are saving us time. They don't save you time necessarily. They take your time, funnily enough. Whenever you have to maintain so many artificial things, they're taking your time. And, unfortunately, especially modern technology, they zap your energy as well. We are becoming, unfortunately, much more mechanical as a civilization. Right? And Marge alluded to this also. You know, now anyone can reach you anywhere in the world at any time. And is your life happier because of it? Be honest, right? You can, you know, from morning till evening, when you go to check your email, you can have like, you know, 100 different emails. Much of them is junk email. Is your life, can you actually say that the quality of your life is improved because of it? One of the worst examples of this is Facebook. The Facebook culture, you go onto Facebook, you see these snaps of people smiling, laughing and joking, and they're all miserable. Yeah, they were posing for the camera. I've seen people on Facebook smiling and laughing and joking together. I know for a fact they don't even like each other. I'm serious. But, you know, posing and this and that. And then other people see it and think that, well, everyone else seems to be so happy. I'm the only miserable person. Right? So then they try and emulate that. But what you don't understand is, no, the people that you, who are smiling that image, they're also miserable. They're also unhappy. So what Maya has done has just amplified the illusion. So that doesn't mean that we may or may not use technology for preaching. That's another thing. But my point is, please do not play into the illusion. Because what you do by playing into the illusion is you actually weaken yourself as an individual. And you find people now in this age, they are more and more insecure. Right? And that insecurity comes because these types of things intensify the bodily identification. Right? You're insecure, now it's even worse. You have to look a certain way. You have to be seen to be doing certain things. If you don't have certain types of, you know, Twitter accounts or this and that, there's something wrong with you. It makes for a weaker society, a weaker individual. And we're trying to go back to Krishna. Our culture should be that it doesn't have to look good, it actually is good. You understand? We shouldn't be the people who are posing in for a photo, but rather people on a day-to-day basis, the relationships and the interaction is actually sweet. Is actually fulfilling. Is actually powerful. Because we know what to give. One more point on this overeating is this mood of gratification. The underlying principle of overeating is I want to gratify my senses. And what is love? As Marge explained, and as is explained in Chaitanya Charitamrita, real love, love for Krishna, as is explained, is the desire to gratify the senses of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So if we project a culture, and if we engage even subtly in things which are all about my own gratification, don't be surprised when you find it difficult to transform and to lead a life which is far more purely focused on Krishna's pleasure. From the subtle, the gross develops. Does that make sense? Yeah? It begins subtly. That's why when you see Srila Prabhupada, there's pictures of Prabhupada, he's drinking water. How does he do it? It's just done so aristocratically. His movements are beautiful because the consciousness is thoroughly pure. You understand? My excitement in spiritual life, and I would suggest that the excitement of any devotee, is that if we do these things, and if you look in your own life, you'll see even a little touch of Krishna consciousness is so powerful, it's made profound changes in our lives already, isn't it? Isn't it? I remember, I by nature am not tidy. I was shocked to see that sometimes nowadays, when I do things, it's just tidy, and I think, where did that come from? That sneaked up on me. But it's because of this teaching and because of the association. Krishna wants to transform us. And everything we need to be transformed is here, now. Again, I'm drilling the same point because it's important not to overload, but to give a few key things that you'll remember. It's all about the elegance and the quality of your application. And if I asked you how many people in this room consciously make sure that they avoid these fixed things, I don't think many people will put their hands up. Does that make some sense? Yeah? We want to relish Krishna consciousness. Krishna, as Marge said, it is enjoyable. It's wonderful. is fulfilling to the extent that it's done sincerely and done properly. So this is the first of the six. So you've hopefully have considered yourself in terms of how much we are affected by this tendency for overeating or collecting more funds than required. Trying to accumulate. And also, what we can do, and actually maybe let's discuss this. What have you seen in your own life or in the lives of others that can be done to bring more balance in relation to this principle? Right? What can be done so we can move away from a tendency to overeat and overcollect? Any ideas? Or should I start? I will start with one thing. When I first heard from devotees about Prabhupada and what Prabhupada was like when he honored prasadam, I was blown away. I was told when I first came to Krishna consciousness that Srila Prabhupada, he would meditate on the prasadam. He would sit down quietly, often by himself, and sometimes his servants would watch him from afar. He would take one piece of prasadam, chew it with his eyes closed. You could actually see he's meditating on the prasadam. And I was thinking recently about this, that when a devotional activity is performed in a meditative state, you actually gain more experience from the activity. Does that make sense? Right now we have a fast food culture. Fast food culture means when it's lunchtime, you just eat as quickly as possible and you're not even conscious of what you were eating. You understand? We weren't conscious that that food is actually prasadam, which has been offered to the Supreme Lord and has been touched by Krishna's lips. And now we're taking that prasadam in that mood. So one way to counteract overeating is to transform your honoring of prasadam into a meditative activity. Try that sometime. See what happens. Your experience expands so much that you don't even need to eat so much. Isn't that amazing? If we do things properly, we're looking for the experience. The materialists, because they're not conscious of anything, they try and get as much different objects as possible, and they have hardly any experience of anything that they've done or that they interact with. We as devotees, we should know the science. If you meditate, if you do it in the proper mentality, again, the point that's made in the preface, proper attitude. Then guess what happens? You actually have more experience even though your externals are less. And if you have more experience even though you have less externals, then actually you overall have more. It's abundance. You have more overall. If you go deeper into every experience, that means it's actually greater. So someone has, you know, houses, cars and so on. You have less materially, but you have a quality of experience which is richer than this other individual. So we want to be meditative in our devotional service. You could try that as a simple practical exercise, that when you're taking prasadam, try and meditate on how this prasadam is so wonderful because it's been touched by Krishna's lips. It is Krishna's personal, intimate exchange of mercy. And his wonderful way of encouraging me, supporting me, and nourishing this body that I will engage in his devotional service. And see what happens. See what happens. It's a very, very big thing. It's the consciousness. We are the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. We do so many things, but ultimately we're trying to develop spiritual consciousness. Does that make sense? Okay. Point number two. It says here, over-endeavoring for mundane things that are very difficult to obtain. Okay, prayasa. The word prayasa means useless endeavor or labor. How do we begin to even discuss this point? There was a presentation that one Prabhupada disciple was giving in America. He was speaking to a whole room of doctors, psychiatrists. It was the American Medical Association. And he began the presentation by saying that it's a shame that while I'm standing here addressing you all, that you're all dying so fast. That you're all dying so fast. Yeah, that's how he began the presentation. Then he went on to explain how doctors have the shortest life expectancy of all professionals. How they have the greatest instance of being addicted to drugs, alcohol, so on. Highest levels of depression, so many things. Because there isn't that science of how to live in a balanced way. In fact, you'll find that over the coming decades, and this is if society is lucky, if they're lucky, they'll find that in order to even be a sane individual, they'll have to take to spiritual life. Even just for material sanity, they will have to introduce different aspects of spiritual life. For example, the doctors don't know that when you're dealing with people who are traumatized and difficulty, you're taking on some of their karma. It's not a question of religious belief. These are facts of existence. It's not dependent on your belief system. So if they actually introduced mantra meditation into the hospitals and doctors were taught to do that, then actually there'll be a greater instance of health all around. In this previous statement that we made about eating more than necessary, according to Ayurveda, the root cause of all illnesses is bad digestion, and that is often to do with overeating. And please don't think that because you're devotees and you're taking prasadam that you can eat what you like and it's not going to affect your body. Isn't it? It's going to affect your body. That body that your soul inhabits actually belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's the truth. So the question is, do you look after your body in the way that you want? Or do you look after your body in the way that Krishna wants? What do you think is going to get you more spiritual benefit? It's so amazing. Prabhupada said Krishna consciousness is so amazing you might just miss it. If you do the same things you do normally, but you do them for the pleasure of Krishna, even that mentality is purifying. Even that mentality of thinking, how would Krishna like me to look after his body? How would Krishna like me to look after these objects which belong to him? Isn't that amazing? And how few are the times that we do that? Some of us in this room will be practicing 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, and we'll think, I've been practicing so long, and I'm not experiencing such high levels of Krishna consciousness. But actually, it's not that you're, just because you come into this movement, it doesn't mean that every moment you're practicing Krishna consciousness. You're practicing Krishna consciousness when you're in Krishna consciousness. In other words, you're practicing Krishna consciousness when you're practicing Krishna consciousness. Right? So all those times when you're doing something else, that's why we're not moving forward as much as we want. These are the fine points. Often they don't talk about this. Oh yes, you're a devotee. Yeah. Okay. But how many hours in the day are you a devotee? How many hours in our day are we doing things for the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? How many hours in the day are we doing things for some other purpose? And how expertly are we applying these points? So this point number two, over-endeavoring for mundane things that are difficult to obtain. We should understand that it cuts into our devotional life when we are overly attached and overly endeavoring for materialistic things. But we know that there's a balance, as we said before. It's not too much, not too little. It's actually about dynamic balance. And therefore, I emphasize dynamic balance because what you need at different points may change. Does that make sense? Right? In London, we were looking at training for devotees who are going to get married. And I remember when I first heard that Chandramouli Maharaj did a seminar on, you know, relationships and, you know, grihastha ashram, I was thinking how progressive this is. Because it's actually understanding what the situation is going to be and preparing people for that. So they can live a realistic, grounded life, but with Krishna still as the focus. And how much Krishna will be pleased with his devotees for their wonderful wisdom and insight. And if we take to these teachings, we will also have that dynamic balance. If we live these teachings wisely. Okay? This is our theme throughout this seminar. It's not enough to say I'm a devotee. Right? If you did a study, you'll find that the quality or the expertise of how people apply this teaching, the spectrum is vast. Right? You have some people, this is why it gets tricky. There's some people, they don't apply Krishna consciousness very well. Right? In this life. But they've got great credit from their previous life. Right? So they don't apply it so well right now, but they actually have a lot of credit, so there's a lot of taste. Someone else comes in, they're trying to do it very well, but they're starting from scratch in this lifetime. Someone else has a different situation, someone else has a different situation. So therefore, you can't really compare. The best you can do is do the best you can, under guidance, to do everything expertly, and then you'll know that you're doing the best you can, and Krishna will help. Because Krishna, he responds to the endeavor of his devotee. Think about this point very carefully. You are getting your personal reciprocation from Krishna based upon how much you are actually trying to be a devotee, trying to please him. And so at every single moment, every single one of us has a different degree to which we're receiving Krishna's reciprocation. And we can also therefore receive more of Krishna's mercy. Okay, so let's do an exercise on this second point as well. So again, think about this point in terms of over-endeavoring for mundane things, especially mundane things that are difficult to obtain. Why is it said here, difficult to obtain? There's a reason. When something is difficult to obtain, not only do you have to put physical effort to achieve it, what other type of effort do you have to put in to get something that's difficult? Financial? Anything else? Mental effort. Time, energy, finances, mental effort. And all of those things that you're pulling in for that mundane achievement or that mundane endeavor are things that are taking away some time and energy that could be engaged in devotional life. So it's not neutral. Nothing's neutral. So we are paying a price in different ways, shapes and forms. Let us look at this point. What I'd like you to do. Okay, actually, let me share a few more things before we go into that. Okay, so in the commentary by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he explains that Krishna is only achieved by one who he himself chooses. It's a very powerful point. So, he decides that he's going to give himself to his devotees. At the same time, in the Madhurikadambini, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, effort attracts mercy. So when the endeavor is going somewhere other than to Krishna, then because less effort is going towards Krishna, the reciprocation of mercy is not necessarily as great as it could be. He wants a relationship with you, but you have to want to be with him. Does that make sense? So as you surrender, Krishna says, Yetamam prapadyante, I reward them accordingly. As they surrender, he is reciprocating with that surrender. Think about this point very carefully. So again, in your own life, think about this point. To what degree are we over-endeavoring? When we were speaking also in London about training the devotees to understand their nature. even before they go into further studies. What I've seen is that generally the devotees who have a clear understanding of their nature and who are well situated, they are having a much better Krishna conscious experience. How does this work? See, one person's over-endeavor is not necessarily the over-endeavor of another individual. For example, do you have anyone in your community who's naturally good at management? Do you know people like that? Yeah, sometimes? So sometimes in the community, you have certain people, they can manage in their sleep, right? In fact, they love managing, right? And then the other person, you get the opposite end of the spectrum, the other person, you know, they couldn't basically manage their way out of the room. You understand? Right? Yeah, they have struggled to tie their shoes. So actually what's interesting is, if you give one person management, he's not stressed by it. You give the same task to another individual, it's stressful. Because it's much more of a stretch. So Srila Prabhupada has made such a powerful statement on this. In the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 2, text number 30, Prabhupada speaks in the purport of the pastime of Gajendra the elephant. This elephant was being attacked by a crocodile in the water. They fought for 1,000 years. Now that's a fight. Right? 1,000 years. Now, what's so amazing, and you know, I encourage you all to read this purport. 8th canto, chapter 2, text number 3. What's so mind-blowingly amazing is how Prabhupada explains in that purport a point that, again, you can't get by your own observation. You have to receive it from authority. So Prabhupada explains that the elephant, Gajendra, was actually far more powerful than the crocodile. Right? But in the 1,000 years of fighting, because they were in the water, which is a natural environment for who? The crocodile or the elephant? The crocodile. The crocodile was getting energy and sensual strength and nourishment from the environment. And the elephant, who was more powerful, being in a foreign environment, in the water, was actually becoming weak. Then Prabhupada goes on to explain that in our fight against Maya, we should not pull ourselves in a position where the senses and the mind and soul will become weak. How many times have you heard that point before? Isn't that amazing? So that means, ladies and gentlemen, that our situation is feeding into our ability to fight Maya from a position of strength. Now that's a revolutionary point. And I'll be honest, I suspect that's a revolutionary point for many people in our ISKCON society who haven't really deeply grasped that point. Prabhupada is saying you should position yourself, you should be in a position of strength to fight Maya. Then he goes on to explain that what constitutes a normal condition is different for different people. Again, such a beautiful point. Because Prabhupada, being thoroughly personal, he does not have some kind of superficial, impersonalistic idea. It's very mature, very healthy, very refined. That for different people, different devotees, they'll have a different situation, which is a position of strength for that particular individual. Now, just imagine one thing for a moment for me. I would like you to imagine just for a moment that everyone in our ISKCON society was well situated. Right? Just imagine for a moment that every single member of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness was well situated. Do you think our movement would advance very strongly in helping the world and sharing Krishna with the world? Yes or no? Isn't that amazing? It's not that you'd have to change the individual. It's again, application. Application. How we actually live this teaching instead of reading it and then forgetting what we've read and thinking that it's nice philosophy, when we don't understand that Prabhupada is saying to us, no, I've given you this to live by. I've given you this to apply in your life. You will see how potent these words really are when you live them. The real potency of these teachings will really emanate into the environment and will come through you, through your own example, when you live what is written in these literatures. So please think about that point. That means that right now, so many members of our society can be much more powerful in their devotional service and offer much more in quality to our movement and even to be more peaceful. If they simply, and this is done with guidance, if they simply situate themselves properly, and these things are all speaking about how to situate yourself, right? These are relating to how to situate yourself properly. Not overeating and over-collecting. It's about how to situate your life. Not over-endeavoring for mundane things. It's about how to situate your life. Number three, talking unnecessarily about mundane subject matters. I'm going to share something with you. It's heavy. It is heavy. So recently when there was one mentorship discussion in London, one person brought up the point that even sometimes amongst devotees, there'll be illicit activity, and sometimes, you know, children can be born out of that illicit connection like that. And then someone even said that in some cases, unfortunately, even some of those children, they end up being aborted. And that's a very heavy thing to say. It's an extremely heavy thing to say. Why am I bringing this up? This third point is about talking unnecessarily about mundane subject matters. And in the commentary by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he talks about different types of prajalpa. Did you know that there's actually a connection between what you say and your sex desire? Did you know that? The tongue vibrates and tastes. And because of this line, if you're able to control this, it actually has an effect upon helping you to actually be free of unnecessary sexual agitation. Isn't that amazing? Again, every time you read Prabhupada's books, you just find the things that he's going to say in there you can't work out. You need to hear this from some authority, from realized sources. When someone is engaging in prajalpa, gossip, oh, did you hear about that person? I heard that this person did this. And you're, oh, you know what? You know, I heard he fell down. You know, with all of these things, you actually become more sexually agitated by engaging in prajalpa. Isn't that amazing? So that means also the reverse is true. If we are more careful about what we speak, you become less agitated. As Maharaj said, when you're less sexually agitated, what happens to the determination? Determination goes up. Now again, imagine this. We have two individuals, they've come back from holiday, right? And they go up, they need to take their luggage up a flight of stairs. Okay? Now, both individuals, their luggage weighs the same. You got your big suitcase, it's full of clothes, they're heavy. Now, when they're going up the stairs, one person takes the luggage up, it's very easy for that person. The other person, they struggle with the luggage. Right? What's the difference between the two people? Why is it that the luggage weighs the same for both individuals? One person takes it up easily, the other person struggles. What's the difference? One stronger. So the more spiritually strong a devotee is, the more that we have received the mercy of Guru and Krishna, it is to that extent that your experience of all of the challenges in your spiritual life are completely transformed. We think it's a suitcase. We think it's a challenge. No, it's you. It's how strong you are relative to to the challenges that Krishna or the material energy who's testing on Krishna's behalf is bringing into our life. So we say, why is Krishna giving me this suitcase? No, you should ask yourself the question, why aren't I strong enough to be able to take this suitcase up these stairs very easily? We don't know what we've done in previous lives. So we don't know what challenges may come upon us. But what we can do, what we can do at any moment, is continually work on ourselves to be a greater recipient of Krishna's mercy. And that is the best insurance policy. That means that whatever comes your way, if you are well connected to the Vaishnavas, and if you are deliberately trying to develop your Krishna consciousness, then it is a guarantee that whatever comes your way, you'll be in the best position and in the best consciousness in which you to deal with the situation. Does that make sense? Again, same point. The expertise of application. So next time you think about gossiping about another person, please remember, you are weakening your own constitution. Think about it. There were some devotees who went on a course in Mayapur. They came back. They had these sheets called, and one of them gave it to me. And the heading on this paper was called "The Critic Takes the Karma," right? And it was explained that when someone criticizes you, if you don't reciprocate, if you don't criticize them back, there's an actual exchange of karma. If someone criticizes you and you don't retaliate, the person who criticizes you, they take some of your sinful karma and you get some of their good karma. Obviously, karma's not good ultimately, but you understand the point I'm trying to make. So when we hear things in the Shastra, like don't gossip, don't criticize, don't blaspheme the devotees, you should understand that the rule follows the reality. Krishna gives these rules because he cares about you unlimitedly. Krishna and the acharyas want you to have the best, so they will not give you instruction unless it's actually the best for you. It's not because, you know, they don't like it. That's actually second. They don't want you to suffer. You understand? So all of these things that they're telling us to avoid is so that we can relish spiritual ecstasy in the association of Vaishnavas. It should not be the case that everyone in our movement is struggling and there's a few people who are doing well. It should be the case that everyone is doing well because everyone understands and is expertly applying this and is relishing Krishna consciousness. There will come a time in this movement, ladies and gentlemen, where we will practice devotional life so expertly that when the Vaishnavas go into any setting, people can tell just by the state of consciousness, by the presence of that individual, he must be one of Prabhupada's followers. And the presence of that Vaishnava, that will be the biggest preaching. Before they've even said a word, they can just feel there's something different about this person. And it's our consciousness. And you see that often. You look at Prabhupada, for example. Externally, how is it that this person who looks externally like an Indian gentleman, how is he able to attract people from such diverse backgrounds? Isn't it? You look at Prabhupada's disciples and the followers and you think, how is it that this one man, personality rather, can attract so many people from so many different backgrounds? Because those people don't have so much in common with each other, but they all love Prabhupada. Isn't it? They all, and they'll sit there and they'll talk to you, Prabhupada did this, Prabhupada said that. Even the smallest thing that he does is so potent. It's not an external thing. These are manifestations of the spiritual energy. This is so amazing. If we're connected, guess what's going to happen? Krishna's going to do it through you. All the miracles that have been happening in this movement It's Krishna doing it, and he wants to give the credit to you. And these six things are the things which get in the way of Krishna working through us. So in one sense, you can consider that these prescriptions, if we remove these six things, you become more and more a candidate for spiritual empowerment. Krishna can work through that particular instrument who removes these blocks. Does that make some sense? So these are very profound points. The critic takes the karma. If you criticize another devotee, and they don't retaliate, you get some of their bad, their sinful karma, they get some of your good karma. So when Krishna says, so when you criticize, they get some of your good karma, you get some of their sinful karma. So when we follow these rules, the person who benefits the most from following Srila Rupa Goswami is who? Who benefits the most from following Srila Rupa Goswami? You do. Is that clear? I want you to do an honest evaluation. Because we want to try and be more and more real. Let's be honest. Think about how much of a tendency you have for Prajalpa. Okay? Think about it. And I mean this in subtle ways. One level is what you say. But even the mentality. Think about it. How much do you find that you have a kind of inclination towards seeing or speaking about something negative in relation to another individual? Bhaktivinoda Thakur has given the ten defenses. He has looked at the 10 offenses against the holy name, and he's given activities to counter each of those 10. The first and most dangerous is to blaspheme the devotees who have dedicated their lives to the propagation of the holy names of the Lord. And he says that the way to avoid criticism of Vaishnavas is to engage the tongue in the glorification of those same Vaishnavas. There's a science to this. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, when devotees would have conflicts, he would get them together, he would sit them down and say, now say something good about this other person. I want you to express something about this other person that is positive, that is good. And then they'll have to look and think and come up with something that they could genuinely appreciate. It's explained in the Yoga Sutras that if you consciously think about the good qualities of a person, it counteracts the tendency to think negatively towards them. Isn't that amazing? Prabhupada's teachings are so clever, so profound, so elegantly done. He'll give you a statement, but there's a whole psychology in there, and there's a whole science behind it. He'll just say, don't criticize, glorify them. But there's a science behind it. It's not artificial. You do that constantly, you will actually lose the tendency towards criticism of devotees. You lose the tendency towards criticizing devotees. You don't make offenses to devotees. How much your spiritual life will fly. As one spiritual leader said years ago, he was saying that for the years of devotional life, for the years of service I've done, he said, I should have been at the platform of Bhava Bhakti, he was saying. He's saying that the reason why I'm nowhere near Bhava Bhakti is because of how many offenses I've made. Interesting, isn't it? It's not the hours you put in. It's the quality of the devotional service minus the avoidance of those things which destroy our spiritual progress. Application of spiritual science. The science of self-realization. Adhyatma vidya, vidyanam. This is how it really works. This is how we really grow in Krishna consciousness. By elegant, expert application. So, let's look at this. Maybe we'll do this as an exercise just to break things up a little. Okay, no problem. So let's Okay, yeah, so let's break now, and then if people can get a bit of time off, and then we'll come back in about 5 minutes to continue. Okay, thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. So we're going to move along with the remainder of this discussion, and Bhuta Bhavana is going to bring us all into this one. Okay. Okay, so please get ready for part two, and this will last up until RT time at 6:30.
Okay. Okay, so Hare Krishna. So what we want to do is a couple of things so we can go deeper into the points we made. What we'll do are two things. One, we're going to get you to discuss. It's found that one of the best ways to learn anything is to teach it. So what we're going to look at, or what we're going to get you to do, is discuss some of the points we've already gone into, particularly the first three of these six things to be avoided. And then also look at what practical things we need to change and what we can change, what we're ready to change. As we mentioned earlier, the whole idea of Krishna consciousness is that it is a science. And as we mentioned, and you know, we keep repeating it, is that your experience of this devotional science, this wonderful spiritual adventure, has a lot to do with how wisely and how elegantly you're applying these teachings. So application is our key word. So we mentioned these three different points by Rupa Goswami that need to be avoided. As he says, one's devotional service is spoiled when he becomes too entangled in the following six activities. So the first one was what? What was the first one? Yes, overeating. Eating more than necessary or collecting more funds than required. The second one was? Yes. Yes, over-endeavoring for mundane things that are very difficult to obtain. And the last one we spoke about was? Prajalpa. Okay, yes. I think people would remember that one. Okay. So let's do this as a beginning exercise. The first one, or the first thing I want you to do, is we're going to ask you to break into pairs, and I'd like you to speak about, in your own life, this principle. Actually, no, let's take it back. You can speak of any of these three, okay? So, between eating more than necessary or collecting more funds than required, that's number one. Over-endeavoring for mundane things that are very difficult to obtain, number two. And the third one is prajalpa. We're going to ask you to pair up, and we're going to ask you to share honestly with your partner which of these three you think is the one that you should most work on. Like that, okay? So think about that, yeah? If it's the case that you feel that none of these three are important, or you're doing excellently on all of these three, right? Okay. And I know I've heard things about this yatra, but we won't get into that right now. But if you feel that you're doing fine on all of these three, then we'd like you to share your realization on why these three are important and what others can do to improve or to give up these things. Remember what we spoke about. We said it's not just a question of giving up, but we're often able to give up something because we replace it. Or we have some practical strategy of doing things differently, so we have a lasting positive result. Okay, so I repeat, the first three, and this is what we're going to discuss in your pairs. Number one was overeating or over-collecting, right? Collecting more funds than necessary. Second one was over-endeavoring for mundane things which are difficult to obtain. And the third one was talking unnecessarily about mundane subject matters, okay? So in your pair, you're going to share either which of these three you feel are the most important for you to work on and how you feel practically you can do that. Or if you feel that none of these things, you're doing very well in all of these areas, then we'd like you to share with your partner your realization on why these things are important to let go of and strategies that others can use to minimize or to let go of these three things which spoil one's devotional service. We encourage you to be as honest as possible. Yeah. Bear in mind that when you're sharing with each other, because you are offering, this is pretty Lakshanam also, you're revealing your mind, right? You're inquiring, you're sharing. You're assisting another devotee. If we make this, and as we make this part of our natural lifestyle, you'll see how Krishna will take care of you. And I don't say it theoretically. I see in my own life how I feel so often Krishna's kindness. How he's so extremely kind and so caring and helpful. And I'm sure many of you had experience. Sometimes you're in a situation, you need something, and then the person just turns up and says, Prabhu, do you need this? Then you think, my God, I was just thinking that I needed this, or I needed to know the answer to this particular question. And Krishna, in the heart of that person, has just said, you know, my devotee needs this. I'd like you to go there and speak to him. Mm-hmm. So we're dealing with a very kind individual, and we want to experience more in our relationship, in our service to this very wonderful, very attractive, very warm and loving, infinitely loving personality, supreme personality of Godhead. So we're going to give you, we'll say 5 minutes, okay? Is the assignment clear? Okay? We won't overload you, we just want you to go deep with what we've given, okay? So which of these three do you particularly need to work on? How do you intend practically to do that? And please don't give a theoretical answer. Please give something that you are actually prepared to do. Something you can do and something that you will do. It's better that you say something small that you're going to do than say something that sounds great, but you're not actually going to implement in your life after this seminar. Okay? Please. Because we want to experience by application. Okay, so 5 minutes. Partner up, starting from now. Okay, so we will need to continue. Can I have Hare Krishna? Hare Bol. Okay, Hare Krishna. Okay, so
Hare Bol. Hare Bol. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Thank you much. Okay, so it's good. So we're all back together again. Okay, good. How did you find the exercise? Yeah? Okay. Again, it's about application. So you will hopefully have discussed something that you're prepared to do, that it's realistic for you, that will take us that bit closer, because we want to be in a position to receive more of Krishna's mercy. And by removing these things which are unfavorable, we will be in a better position to receive more of Krishna's mercy. We'll be more receptive, and we'll be able to practice our devotional life on a higher or more refined way. Okay, so. Yes. Let's hear a few so we can all learn. So anyone would like to share? No, you can share what it is that you feel you need to work on and what you're going to do. Maybe a few, because it's good if you share, because in this exercise, when you are sharing with each other, you're actually, in that training, you're supporting and strengthening one another. And it's very, very powerful. It's powerful for building community. It's powerful for building relationship. And it's powerful for attracting the mercy of the Lord when he sees his devotees supporting, encouraging, inspiring,
the devotees. So then, yes. Oh, hold on, so we can pass the microphone. Yes, just.
We talked a bit about Prajapa, and we think that there is two things about this. One, that sometimes the cause is that, for example, if I'm not humble enough, and I think that I'm better in some way that than that other person, or I would be, I would like to be better, and so that can cause this, and we can help it if we try to glorify that devotee and concentrate on the good qualities.
Wonderful, definitely. Thank you very much for sharing, for being bold and confident enough to share. Is there anyone else who'd like to share? Anyone else like to share what they felt they wanted to work on and that they would practically work on after this session or this retreat? Not all at once. Would you like to share? Because you've got the microphone in your hand.
I found out about myself that I'm overeating.
Okay.
I eat only prasad, but it's too good. I should do more other activities also that like more physical. Activities to process this.
That's fine. Okay. That's good. Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to share? The lady at the back had the hands up. Please. Thank you.
Ekanta and me, we live in the same flat. And it's a very good point to think that instead of doing prajalpa and saying something negative, that every time we say something positive. Mm-hmm. So that is a very good point. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah. So we really, this is very, very important. It's interesting. I think for many people, the prajalpa point would be the one that people want to work on. What we say to each other is very, very, very powerful. You'll find many people in the mundane world, they have they have issues with a particular person because someone somewhere at some point said something to them, and it may have been even decades ago, but they still haven't forgotten it. They're still upset. They're still hurt by what was said. And even you'll find that in devotional circles as well, you know, where people where they can't get along for some reason because of different things that have been said. We really want to work on this in particular and make sure that the power of the tongue, because it's very powerful, that it vibrates those things which are positive and which are progressive for all of us and to build community. Did someone else have their hand up on this? No? Okay. Oh, someone did. Okay. Sorry. Yeah. I wasn't sure. If you could share, please share.
This is very hard for me to admit, but I have a tendency to criticize my children.
Okay. She got three children? Okay.
And I want everything to be really nice in the house because of the deities. Mm-hmm. But I tend to say to my children, do this, make sure that's all right, that's all right. So my way of actually changing that is to actually serve them. So rather than, because they're so busy with their school or whatever, when they're not there, it won't take me 2 minutes to just put the things away rather than criticize.
Wow.
So, sorry.
No, that's fine. Thank you very much. You've actually reminded me of something. So in a seminar that was facilitated by Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, he was saying that when devotees reveal what they need to work on, when we're honest, in good association about what we need to work on, it actually helps us to change. It helps us to let go of some of the tendencies that cause that kind of behavior to take place. So the fact that you're able to share that, it takes humility to actually say that in front of everyone. It takes some humility. So the fact that you're able to share that, it's very, very special. You know, and ultimately, we want to hopefully be the kind of people who are so trustworthy that people can be open in association, knowing that it will be positively received in a healthy and mature way, and that we will encourage each other to grow. So thank you for sharing that. Okay. I know our time is a little bit limited. We've got another 20 minutes. So what I'm going to do is quickly run through a few remainder points, and then we'll end for 6:30, with your permission. Is that okay, yeah? Okay. So, there are three other points that Nectar of Instruction gives as to things to avoid. Okay. So I'll just kind of do a little bit of a summary of these points. So we mentioned the first three. Number four is practicing the scriptural rules and regulations only for the sake of following them and not for the sake of spiritual advancement, or rejecting the rules and regulations of the scriptures and working independently or whimsically. So sometimes there's a tendency where people will say silly things like, you know, we're here to love Krishna, we don't worry about the rules, right? And there's this kind of craziness because we don't understand that actually Krishna consciousness is a relationship. You couldn't do that to any other person. You couldn't say, it doesn't matter how I treat them, we have a relationship. You couldn't do that. Because naturally, we're people. We know what it's like when we are treated a certain way, when we're hurt. Krishna's also a person. And actually, this whole devotional practice is actually all about relationship. The spiritual world is all about relationship. And therefore, there are natural ways that you deal with people that are favorable, that would inspire positive reciprocation, and ways that you deal with someone which will create enmity or negativity. So really, when we talk about the rules and regulations are actually coming from people who love God. They love Krishna, and they know therefore what we should do in order to reawaken our dormant love for that same personality. Now at the same time here, it's talking about not going to one unbalanced point or the other. Very important point about this. And this is another secret that can help us in our spiritual life. We know that we can classify devotional service in three ways. Into three categories. You have your sambandha, which is the knowledge, the theoretical knowledge, sambandha gyan. You have the abhideya, which is the devotional practices. And then you have the prayojana, which is the goal. A wise and intelligent devotee learns to see the prayojana through the abhideya. In other words, we learn to see the goal. We keep the goal in mind through the different activities or through the different principles or rules that we follow. So that way we understand that everything we're doing is actually for one purpose. We are trying to attain or to reawaken our dormant love for Krishna. Think about how profound this is. If you do your activities in remembrance of the goal, it can actually transform the entire quality of your experience. Right? Next time you're chanting, you're thinking this chanting is a struggle, but you remember that actually this chanting is actually my ability or my opportunity to associate directly with Krishna, to purify myself, to return to the spiritual world where Krishna is there. I have my own eternal identity, which will be revealed when I become fully pure in the spiritual kingdom. I have a particular service, a way of relating to Krishna. All of these things are present. If you keep the goal in mind, it can transform the quality of all your spiritual experiences. So the idea is we do follow. We follow the rules and regulations, but we follow them understanding the purpose behind them. And therefore we don't become fanatical. It keeps us balanced as well. We're meant to become so mature as a movement that we can see the ultimate principle behind different situations. And this type of mentality comes when we follow everything properly, but with a clear understanding as to why we are following. I'm not sure how prevalent it is here, but in London, when you have people from Hindu backgrounds who have some familiarity with Vedic teachings, you'll find that generally, more and more, their children don't practice either Hinduism or what to speak of Krishna consciousness. Right? And the reason why is because when there are certain practices and activities and they ask, what's the purpose behind this? Why do we do this? They get no answers. You understand? You can't give people a set of rules and regulations devoid of the purpose behind those rules and regulations and expect that intelligent people will follow. And this is a warning to every single person in this room, especially people who have children or will have children. This is again how practical the teachings are. You need to know why you do what you do. Because the people who come to this movement, they have a special quality. They have sukriti, agyata sukriti or sukriti, to come to Krishna consciousness. And they often are intelligent people. So if they ask either a preacher or if they say it happens to be their parents, why do we do this? Why do you follow this particular process? Why do we follow these rules? And if all you can say is because that's how we did it traditionally, right? It's our tradition. Then your tradition will die. This is how you kill a culture. This is how you kill a culture. You kill a culture by blindly, fanatically following a whole set of doctrines with no clue as to why. And then when the people leave that teaching, when the children leave that tradition, then the parents just sit there wondering why. What's wrong with them? Why don't they follow? Why aren't they like us? Very, very, very serious point. So we want to follow, but we want to follow in knowledge of the goal. And the goal is very powerful. In the Mahabharata, one very profound story is how the Pandavas, they were brought forward by Dronacharya, and he wanted to test them. So Dronacharya had put a model bird on a branch of a tree. And he called each of the Pandavas up one by one to ask them to shoot the eye of the bird. So he calls the first Pandava up. So, can you see the tree? I can see the tree. Yeah, I can see the tree. I can see the bird. Okay, don't worry about trying to shoot. You just sit down. He called the next one up. Can you see the tree? No, I can't see the tree. Can you see the branch? I can see the branch, though. I can see the branch. I can see the bird. Okay, don't worry. You can sit down. Next one. Can you see the tree? No, I can't see the tree. Can you see the branch? No, I can't see the branch. Can you see the body of the bird? Yes, I can see the body of the bird. Don't worry, sit down. Each Pandava, as they came up, the fact that they could see so much was their disqualification. Finally, Arjuna came up. So Dronacharya asked him, Arjuna, can you see the tree? Arjuna said, no, I can't see the tree. He said, can you see the branch of the tree? He said, I can't see the branch of the tree. He said, can you see the body of the bird? Arjuna said, no, I can't see the body of the bird. So Dronacharya asked him, Arjuna, what can you see? Arjuna's response, he said, all that I can see is the eye of the bird. And Dronacharya said, therefore, you are qualified to shoot. So we have to keep the goal in mind. Prima Pumata Mahan. We're not just doing this for the sake of it. There's an entire spiritual world which makes even the best so-called mundane experience here look like intense suffering. You can't pay the residents of the spiritual world to come here. There's nothing, and even Prabhupada, even he himself, when he was speaking about how he was with Krishna, and Krishna told him to come here, as compassionate as Prabhupada is, what did he say? He said, no way. That's his answer. I want you to, Krishna said, I want you to come down and preach. He said, there, no way. And Krishna said, it's okay, I'll let you live in nice places and I will bring my books with you. I will give you these books. And Prabhupada said, therefore I came. So this is our legacy. There is a goal. We're doing these activities, but we're doing these activities for a particular purpose. And if you keep that in mind, your activity becomes alive. It becomes alive. It's not just, I have to get this done. It's that this is another chance for me to come closer to Krishna. I've read about it. I understand it. If I do this, I'll become more purified. I wonder what amazing adventures Krishna is preparing for me as I prepare myself by following these teachings. I want to read Nectar of Instruction because I want to associate with Srila Rupa Goswami. These things are always available. So please never forget the goal. Let's move on. So that's the fourth principle that brings Vinashati, which spoils devotional service. The fifth one, associating with worldly-minded persons who are not interested in Krishna consciousness. You'll see this recurring theme throughout Srila Prabhupada's books, association. Association. These devotees, when it says that the devotees are like Kalpa Vriksha, Chintamani, these aren't actually kind of metaphors. They are actually that powerful. I was speaking to one of my god brothers, I think it was last weekend. And he made a very, very wonderful point. And I was like, wow, this is really interesting. He says that what happens in the association of a pure devotee, and you see this, you know, we have the great blessing of Chandramuli Maharaj's association of us. You often find that very elevated devotees, when they're in the environment, people are different. Have you ever had that experience? When the elevated devotees come, when they're not there, there's arguments, disagreements. When they come, people are like, oh, they just feel more inspired to cooperate. They're in a better mood. And I used to think, being kind of skeptical, I used to think, they're not really like that. They're just pretending something because Maharaj is here. But my god brother explained that actually that's not exactly the full story. Every single person carries their own atmosphere, their own consciousness, and it radiates out. So when the pure devotee comes, that spiritual energy is so powerful, it overpowers the lower modes. So when they're around, people who normally don't want to cooperate, they just feel, you know what? I feel I should cooperate today. It's like, you know, I don't know why, I just feel in a good mood. Yeah, exactly, yeah. You see, it's powerful. It's powerful. But there's another side of that coin. If the pure association of devotees has this effect, you should also understand the negative circumstances by being open-hearted in the exchanges with very materialistic people. I have personally seen there are some people, and I think you may have had experience, there are some people, there's so much in the lower modes that when you look at their face, You can't tell if they're a human or if they're an animal. Yeah? Have you ever seen someone like that? You're looking at them thinking, he looks like a lion. He actually looks like a lion. His features are such, the mode is so, he's captivated by such a low mode. His physical body is already changing towards the kind of creature he's going to be in his next life. Or someone else, you look and you think, this person looks like a pig. Everything's very kind of tamasic. They actually look like, they eat like a pig. They snort, they don't speak properly. You think, this person, they actually look like a pig. Amazing. Yeah. it's actually amazing. Of course, you don't tell them that. That would be a bit too much. Okay. I wouldn't go that far. But it's amazing what's going on. The consciousness is actually it's the key factor. Here is speaking about the avoidance of associating intimately with worldly minded people. And there is the other side, as Marge said. Therefore, we need to associate with pure devotees. And actually Bhaktivinoda Thakur actually explains that also. He mentions that point in Bhakti Loka. Rupa Goswami mentions that point. We want to take association. If someone is worldly minded, we want to give our association or give them Krishna conscious association, but we don't want to be brought down by such an individual. Even the mundane person who seems to be doing well, you should always remember that karma is deadly because karma never remains. You have your millionaire who seems to be doing well. There was a documentary years ago. I heard about it. I didn't actually watch it. But it was about homeless people. And the funny thing was, some of the people who were homeless, they were previously millionaires. Can you believe that? Someone has gone from being a multi-millionaire to living in a cardboard box on the street. And you never can tell what type of karma a person has that can get them from point A to point B. Years ago, I remember speaking to my brother-in-law. I called him. We were speaking. He was 26 years old at the time. His name is John. So I said, John, how are you? He said, I'm okay. He said, but I've got a bit of a sore throat. That's what he told me. 2 weeks later, we found out a bit more about his sore throat. It wasn't a sore throat. He had cancer. Right? A 26-year-old male, that was a tumor. The sore throat was a tumor that was growing in his throat. He had lymphoma cancer. Right? At one point, the tumor got so big, he had to be rushed to the hospital. It was pressing on his windpipe. He couldn't breathe. He was suffocating. So they rushed him to hospital to perform some operation so he could actually extend the space. And I remember thinking, I spoke to this same person 2 weeks ago. How many times has someone had a sore throat? So we don't know what karma we have. So don't think that the worldly people are okay. Oh, but he seems to be doing so well. Just as a linked point. Often I've heard, over many years, devotees will say, you know what, sometimes the non-devotees, they're nicer than the devotees. Have you heard that before? You know, sometimes, I want to be a devotee, but these devotees give me a hard time. You know, sometimes, you know what, Prabhu? Sometimes the non-devotees, they're nice, being with them is nicer than the devotees. So I'll share with you one point on that. I'm almost out of time. I heard a lecture, and it was a point that was really powerful. That in many cases for materialistic people, even the nice materialistic people, if you took away their outlets for sense gratification, in many cases you see a monster. I know what it's like here, but I can tell you for a fact, if in London one day, right, there was no alcohol, right, especially on a Friday night, people would go crazy. If there was no soap operas on TV for one day, it would be chaos. In New York a few years ago, there was a power cut, right? And on the day that there was a power cut, the violence just escalated. People became so frustrated because they didn't have these outlets for sense gratification. So don't underestimate the quality of the Vaishnavas. These people have made tremendous sacrifices to try to practice Krishna consciousness. So they may not be 100% pure at any one point in time, but they're on the path of perfection. So even though your materialistic person may be a nice guy, when their karma runs out, or under a certain material situation, they can be completely different. See, it's not the same. It's not what it seems. So therefore, anyway, the point is that we don't want to open our hearts and our value system to be transferred to a materialistic value system. And I'll tell you one other thing on this, and this is so important. The only way you can avoid it is not just to not associate with worldly-minded people, but you must see through the eyes of Shastra. Otherwise, you will see the devotees in a materialistic way. It's not enough to say, okay, I will give my association to materialistic people, but I won't take this. If you don't study the Shastra, when things go wrong or there's challenges in your devotional life, you will judge the devotees in a mundane way. Because that's what you're used to, and you don't know anything else because you've not understood how to see them according to Guru Sadhu Shastra. It's a warning. Anyway, we're almost for time, so we'll go to the last point and then we'll stop. Okay, so that is number 5. And the last one is being greedy for mundane achievements. Right? It's very interesting. I'll just read you this as the last point. So, this is very interesting when I read this. Yes, this isn't Bhakti Loka. This is Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and he's quoting Sanatana Goswami. And he says, even if one gives up all kinds of material desires, the desire for fame, interestingly enough, is very difficult to give up. This desire for fame, which is compared to stool, is the root cause of all anattas. Interesting, isn't it? Sanatana Goswami states this in the Hari Bhakti Vilas. Huh? Very, very interesting. We're actually almost at the time. My main point is that the same theme we're resonating throughout is application. And it's better that you take a little and you really use it. You know, that we change with it, that we run with it. We want to live this teaching. And if we live this teaching, you will relish like anything. Because Krishna wants you to be successful. Krishna is more concerned that you come back to him than even you are to return to the spiritual world. So we've been given these merciful clues by Rupa Goswami, and if we take these on board, our life will be sublime. Thank you very much for your time. Hare Krishna. Nectar of Instruction ki jai. Shri Rupa Goswami ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Janita Gaur Premanandi. Hari Hari Bol.
Hare Krishna, just a brief announcement. So Aarti's now, and then at 7 o'clock we'll come for the final lecture on verse number 5. Just a point that I just got inspired. This book, Bhakti Loka, that's been mentioned throughout these lectures, is Bhakti Vinod Thakur's going deep into these two verses, verse 2 and verse 3. It's a whole book, about 150 pages, something like that, about taking these 12, 6 favorable, 6 unfavorable, into more and more philosophical understanding. So the book's available, I know, in English. It's been out for at least 15 years in ISKCON. So I highly recommend it if you want to go deeper into these subject matters. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.